Hey, it's Movie Snark, making fun of what comes out of Hollywood. Explicit language guaranteed. I'm Archie Andrico, and you'll hear my voice a lot, though there will be guest readers. All movie parody scripts come from the-editing-room.com. This time it's Frankenstein, 1931, written by Craig, read by Archie Andrico.
Fade in. Interior stage. Edward Van Sloan shuffles embarrassedly out in front of the audience. Edward Van Sloan. Ugh. Apparently, I'm supposed to come out here to issue a dire warning about how shocking and terrifying the film you're about to witness is. Yes, it's basically like the intros to the early Simpsons Halloween specials, except those specials were scarier. The existence of Plan 9 from outer space isn't doing us any favors either. Sighs. Look, we didn't know, all right? We had no way of knowing how sophisticated horror movies would get. To us, pale dudes with creepy eyes seemed like the height of terror. It's not our fault. Runs off, sobbing. Exterior cemetery. Mad scientist Colin Clive and his assistant Dwight Fry are out grave robbing. Colin Clive. Good work, creepy hunchback assistant who is bafflingly not named Igor. This is one fine corpse we've dug up. I think I'll take this guy's spleen, earlobes, and left pinky. Now on to the next one. We're still short a couple of molars and an Achilles tendon. Dwight Fry. Okay, what exactly does this little experiment of yours need to sew all these different corpses together? Wouldn't a single dead guy have pretty much all the necessary bits to make a person? Colin Clive. I can't just bring one dead person back to life. The whole building a person shtick is the entire hook of our premise. Besides, this way I can mix and match the best possible person parts. Like, check out the top of this guy's head. Did you ever see such a perfectly flat top of someone's head? Dwight Fry. That is one impressively flat and boxy head top. Colin Clive. Exactly. It'll go great with the monolithic, Neanderthal-like forehead I already installed. Now, be a good chap and drop by the university for a human brain. Interior University. Dwight sneaks in to steal a grade A premium brain, but is startled and drops it. So instead he grabs a jar labeled Crazy Murderer Brain. Do not touch. Dwight Fry. You thought young Frankenstein was exaggerating, didn't you? But no, that's actually what happens in the original movie. Seriously, this stuff pretty much comes pre-parodied. Interior Office. Colin's fiancée, May Clark, has come to see Colin's former professor, Edward Van Sloan. Also, some guy named John Bowles is just sort of there. May Clark. Professor, I'm worried about Colin. He doesn't call. He doesn't write. He holds himself up in his creepy abandoned tower, ranting about death and chopping up bodies. What does this mean for our absurdly incongruous, tone-shattering wedding plans? Edward Van Sloan. I wish I could help, but I haven't spoken with Colin either. He got really obsessive about destroying and creating life, and then finally cut ties with the university because he didn't think our cadavers were sunken-eyed and hollow-cheeked enough. May Clark. So a student who kept ranting about destroying life stormed out with the aim of sourcing his own corpses? Didn't it occur to you that maybe you should have kept tabs on that situation? Edward Van Sloan. You might have a point. Come on. Let's go talk to Colin. With any luck, we'll get there like 3 minutes before his big experiment happens by sheer coincidence. John Bowles. Does anybody know who I am or why I exist? Interior creepy gothic tower. May, Edward, and John show up right as Colin is about to animate his corpse mosaic. Colin Clive. At last, I can reveal what I've been working on. I discovered a sort of ultraviolet radiation and was able to use it to bring small animals back from the dead. And then my findings were published in every research journal and I became the most famous scientist in the world in... Snaps forehead. Oh, fuck, I forgot that step. Oh, well, who needs to win a Nobel Prize and go down in history as the guy who cured death, when instead I can do a bunch of insane, illegal electro-necromancy and be remembered as that crackpot who sinned against nature? He straps his creation into his cheesy mad science zapmatron and exposes it to a bunch of lightning. Its hand twitches feebly. John Bowles. Holy shit, you did it. Now let's see this thing in action so our monster movie can actually start to interior cozy home. May and John are hanging out with Colin's comic relief dad character, Frederick Kerr. Frederick Kerr. May, when or when are you and Colin going to have your wedding? May Clark. Don't worry. As soon as he's less busy at work, we'll have our wedding. Frederick Kerr. I'm starting to think that the lad's got in cold feet and there won't be any wedding. John Bowles. And what the hell, guys? We just watched a mad scientist create an undead monstrosity. What is this shit right now? Lionel Belmore, flouncing in. I'm the Burgomaster, and I want to know what's going on with this big wedding. Frederick Kerr. Don't ask me. I can't get a straight answer about this wedding. John Bowles. We're pointing our camera at the wrong stuff, guys. Go back to the creepy lab, or I swear I will get even more boring and pointless. Go. Now. Interior, creepy lab. Fine, we're back in the lab with Colin and Edward. Edward Van Sloan. Your creature is an abomination, Colin. It should be destroyed. Colin Clive. What makes you say that? All he's done is shuffle around and not talk. Edward Van Sloan. But he looks all weird and gives me the willies. That is a totally legitimate reason to murder a dude. Colin Clive. Well, Steve Buscemi better keep right the fuck away from you. Then the creature, Boris Karloff, enters the room backwards so he can turn around for a big makeup reveal. Boris Karloff. Okay, wait. Am I supposed to face the direction I'm walking towards or away from? I'm still getting the hang of all this. Colin Clive clears throat pointedly. Boris Karloff. What I meant to say was... Rrr. Come on, man. Couldn't we go with my characterization from the book? I bet audiences would love an articulate, contemplative monster. Colin Clive. And try telling that to Robert De Niro. Boris Karloff. Well, do I have to move around like an arthritic mannequin in a full-body cast? I'm supposed to be threatening here. Surely you're more athletic and action-ready, Frankenstein, Colin Clive. Aaron Eckhart. Boris Karloff. I see your point. Urgh. Stumbles around. Dwight Fry bursting in. Where is he? Ah, there's my boss's life work that I spent many hours of back-breaking labor helping him create. Now I can resume abusing it with fire for seemingly no reason. Dwight threatens Boris with a torch. Freaking out, Boris flails his arms and knocks people over. Colin Clive. It panics when terrified for its life. Damn, I guess Edward's right. The thing's clearly pure evil. To the dungeon with it. Interior dungeon. Boris is chained up and Dwight is menacing him with a whip. Boris Karloff. Who the hell supplied you with a whip anyway? Cut it out. Dwight Fry. Or what? You'll rip your chains out and club me to death? Don't be stupid. There's no reason a patchwork jumble of corpses should have superhuman strength. Boris Karloff. Actually, I was thinking I'd tear my chains out, then fashion that whip into a noose, then hang you from the 15-foot-high rafter there. Dwight Fry. Well, that makes even less sense. Come on. That's so obviously implausible that the only way you could do that is if the camera completely cut away to interior lab. Dwight Fry, off screen. Ah! Colin and Edward rush down to find Dwight dead and Boris loose. They hurriedly sedate Boris. Edward Van Sloan. This can't go on, Colin. Leave it to me. I'll humanely dispose of the beast. It's humane to carve somebody open and start rooting around in their internal organs while they're still alive, right? Colin Clive. Fine, dissect it, I guess. But remember, if it turns out to be preternaturally resistant to your sedatives... Edward Van Sloan. I know. Pay basically no heed to that fact and not even strap its arms down or anything. Now, you go off and deal with that stupidly out-of-place wedding of yours and just assume that this all went well. Colin Clive. Sounds like a plan. Leaves. Edward Van Sloan. Murdered. Boris Karloff. Escapes. Exterior. House so close to a lake, it's practically underwater. Boris, wandering around randomly, happens across the little girl playing in her backyard, which consists of like 4 square feet of grass and a giant lake. Little girl. Oh, look, a 7-foot monstrous corpse man. This is a thing that a 5-year-old girl would clearly be cheerily unafraid of. Come throw flowers in the lake with me. Boris Karloff throws flowers. Damn, I'm out of flowers. Well, I guess there are dozens more flowers right there on the ground, so... Throws girl. Little girl drowns instantly. Boris Karloff. Oh, shit. In my innocence, I didn't know that that could hurt her. Or that this lake dropped off so ridiculously sharply that 2 feet in is a bottomless pit. Or that the girl who lives right on the very edge of this death lake was never taught how to swim. And was, I guess, wearing clothes made of lead. Boris runs off in distress. 1931 censors. Well, that scene was one of the most effective in the movie and entirely crucial to the narrative. Cut, 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 cut. There, that's better. Now the film ought to be acceptable to people with the same pathetically fragile constitutions as ours. Looks out window, sees spider webs. Oh, my vapors! Faints. interior Casa de Frankenstein. Deranged, mad-eyed scientist Colin is preparing for his big happy wedding to May, which still doesn't jibe at all. John Bowles. Bad news, Colin. The creature has been reported terrorizing the mountain villages. And by terrorizing, we seem to mostly mean stumbling confusedly through the undergrowth. Apparently, weird-looking lost dudes count as both high drama and primo gossip in this jerkwater burg. Colin Clive. Well, if he's wandering the mountains, we're safe at least. I mean, unless he happens to wander all the way into town and just randomly burst into this exact building, which he would have no way of knowing I'm currently in, surely we're safe from that level of utter contrivance. Interior May's room. Boris Karloff bursting in. Oh, sure, this is much better than the book's intelligent creature actually plotting in an act of revenge. Me just bumbling around, attacking whoever. That's great storytelling right there. May Clark. Oh, no. Quick. Is there anything here I can use to defend myself or effect my escape? Oh, right. 1930s heroin. Shrieks uselessly. Boris Karloff. Bah-ha-ha-ha. That's right. I will now overturn some chairs, lurch clumsily after you like a slow-motion Benny Hill, then run away the moment anyone else shows up. I'm so intimidating! Flees. Exterior town. The body of the little girl is brought to town by her father. Father. I left my little girl who can't swim completely by herself right next to a bottomless lake, and when I got home she drowned. Clearly she's been murdered. That's the only logical explanation. Lionel Belmore. Well, in a similar time frame to that drowning, there's also been talk of some big guy wandering around. So based on that reasoning, let's form a huge mob and kill him without due process. Colin Clive. I'll help kill this guy, whoever the hell he is. If only some guy were around who could give us useful information about the creature, am I right? I'd certainly volunteer all relevant facts if it were me who had unleashed this horror upon the town. But it wasn't, so don't even ask, okay? Lionel Belmore. All right, you take half the townsfolk up to Mount Fake-Looking. Just take a left at the curtains with clouds painted on them, then keep going until you reach the styrofoam boulders. Exterior. Soundstage that we'll pretend is a mountain. A small army of torch-wielding villagers go out hunting a frightened five-day-old. Eventually, Colin wanders off by himself and stumbles on Deboris. Colin Clive. All right, you loathsome creature. You may have superior strength, but I have... Pat's pockets. Wait, did I seriously not bring a weapon? Did the entire mob not bring any weapons? Not even pitchforks? That's a violent mob staple. Shit! Colin flees into a windmill. Boris pursues him at the approximate speed of treacle running uphill. Eventually, Boris has Colin cornered on a balcony, and instead of just ripping his head off or something, he tosses him over the railing for a deadly one-and-a-half-story fall. Colin Clive. Aha, but thinking fast, I'm able to survive the fall by cleverly transforming into a really... I'm able to survive the fall by cleverly transforming into a really obvious straw dummy. The townsfolk set fire to the windmill, with Boris inside. The entire building is consumed by flame and collapses into rubble. Boris Karloff. Arr, I sure hope a sequel happens so I can implausibly survive this. Gains power of speech. Colin Clive. Well, the climax is finished. That can only mean one thing in 1930s Hollywood. And Frederick Kerr. An insultingly abrupt and goofy ending. Oh, good night, everybody. End.
Movie Snark is a project of Bad Maria Productions. Please visit badmariaprods.com for more, and thanks for listening.